Hello, welcome to Science TLDR, your shortcut to being well-informed on the cutting edge of scientific discovery. Today, we're embarking on a deep dive into some really fascinating research. It's a paper called Profiling Hinge Plasticity in Intact Monoclonal Antibodies for Antigen Recognition, authored by Arnab Bhattacharya and colleagues, and it's just out in Biochemistry 2025. And this work, it represents a pretty significant step in understanding a class of therapeutics that are truly foundational in modern medicine.
Absolutely foundational. We're talking about monoclonal antibodies, Matt.
Exactly. They've totally revolutionized treatments for, you know, cancer, autoimmune diseases. The list goes on. Miracle workers, really.
They are. But here's the thing. The enduring challenge has been getting a full picture of how they actually work dynamically.
How they move and behave in their natural, intact form.
Precisely. It's been a really tough nut to crack for a structural biologist.
So this deep dive is about a breakthrough, a new way to see them.
That's right. A methodology that finally gives us a clearer, more dynamic view into these incredibly complex molecules. You see, the core problem we're tackling, these aren't small proteins. They're huge, around 150 kilodaltons.
Multi-domain, glycosylated, complex stuff.
Very complex. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how do these big things actually move, flex, interact? And crucially, how does that movement affect their function, their stability?
Things that really matter for a drug.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And traditional methods, they've really struggled with intact mAbs. Often, you know, researchers had to look at smaller pieces.
Which means you lose the bigger picture, right?
Exactly. You miss how the whole thing works together. This new NMR approach, though, it's shining a light on a part of the antibody we haven't appreciated enough.
So for a long time, it's like we've been trying to solve this puzzle with missing pieces. Or maybe the wrong tools.
That's a good way to put it. Like having this amazing orchestra, but only hearing bits and pieces because you couldn't mic the whole ensemble properly.
Okay, let's unpack that challenge. We know mAbs are successful, but their size, that Y shape, the sugars, it makes them hard to study.
Definitely. We see they work, but understanding why they work or sometimes don't work or how to make them better, that's been tough. One big issue is what we call physicochemical liabilities.
Okay, what are those exactly?
Basically, intrinsic weaknesses.
Yep.
Things like aggregation, where they clump up, or oxidation, chemical damage.
And that affects how well they work as a therapy.
Severely. It can reduce efficacy, even could cause immune reactions. But why these happen, structurally, often we just haven't known.
And the standard tools fall short.
They do. Take X-ray crystallography. Powerful, yes. But intact mAbs, they're often recalcitrant, as the paper says.
Meaning they just don't want to form those perfect crystals you need?
Exactly. They're too flexible, too dynamic. They resist settling into that ordered lattice. So you can't easily get a snapshot of the whole moving molecule.
So people break them down into smaller bits, like the Fab domains.
Right, domain parsing. You study the fragments because they are easier to crystallize or analyze with NMR.
But you lose something doing that.
You lose a lot. You lose the overall structure, the subtle ways different parts influence each other. It's like, you know, reading chapters but missing the whole plot.
Okay, what about NMR nuclear magnetic resonance? Doesn't that look at dynamics?
It does, but traditional NMR hits a wall with molecules this big. 150 kilonate. That's huge for NMR.
Why is size such a problem there?
Because big molecules tumble slowly in solution. Slow tumbling leads to unfavorable transverse relaxation.
Which means
the NMR signal basically disappears very quickly. It gets broad, smeared out, like trying to get a sharp photo of something moving fast and blurry, hard to see details. And then there's the glycosylation, the sugars. They make it really hard to use isotope labeling.
Which is usually essential for NMR on big proteins.
It's usually the prerequisite, yeah. You swap out common atoms for NMR active ones like carbon-13.
Yeah.
But with mAbs made in mammalian cells, getting that labeling right with all the sugars, it's incredibly complex, often impractical.
So, yeah, a molecular black box. We know they work, these miracle drugs, but how the actual movement and interaction of the whole thing has been a mystery.
Precisely. Like knowing the car drives well, but having no reliable way to look under the hood at the moving engine parts.
Until now, perhaps. This new NMR fingerprinting approach you mentioned.
Exactly. This is where it gets clever. The researchers used 2D NMR specifically, an experiment called 1H-Shear-13-CHSQC.
Okay.
And this is the key. They did it in natural isotopic abundance.
Whoa, okay. Without the special labeling, how on earth do you get a signal? Isn't that like finding a needle in a haystack?
It sounds like it, but here's the ingenuity. It leverages what they call segmental mobility and amino acid side chain flexibility. Meaning, even though the whole huge protein is tumbling slowly, certain parts of it, specific segments or sidechains are still moving much faster, more independently.
Ah, okay. So some bits are more wiggly than others.
Sort of, yeah. Mm. And those faster moving parts, they have better relaxation properties. This specific NMR technique is like a filter. It preferentially picks up signals only from those dynamic regions.
So it ignores the blurry signal from the slow, bulky parts and focuses on the sharp signals from the fast-moving bits.
That's a great way to think about it. Like in that crowded room analogy, you tune out the general static and focus on the people actively moving and gesturing. This NMR does that at the molecular level.
Brilliant. But how do you know which bits are moving? If you get signals, how do you assign them?
Excellent question. That's the other clever part. They're peptide-based assignment methodology.
Hmm.
They didn't just fish for signals, they synthesized short peptides, small protein fragments corresponding to areas they suspected were flexible.
Like the CDRs, the binding loops.
Exactly, the CDRs, and critically, the hinge segment. Then they recorded NMR spectra of these small, flexible peptides. And then they compared those spectra to the spectra from the whole intact antibody.
And they could match them up.
Remarkably, yes. For certain mobile residues, leucine, threonine, alanine, proline, lysine, they could directly transfer the assignments. They could say, ah, this signal in the intact antibody corresponds to this specific residue in the flexible peptide region.
That's the key to identifying what is moving.
Absolutely. It unlocks the information.
And they tested this on several well-known antibodies.
Yes, a good panel. Adalimumab, infliximab, trastuzumab, all standard IgG1 mAbs, and also etanercept, which is an Fc fusion protein. So a relevant set to test the method.
Okay, so they have this tool, this lens, to see the moving parts. What was the big reveal? What did they find that changes things?
This is where it gets really interesting. They successfully identified signals from the hinge segment. And more than that, they showed its plasticity.
Plasticity meaning it changes shape, it's flexible.
Highly flexible and capable of changing its conformation significantly. For a long time, we thought of the hinge mainly as just a linker. Right? Allowing the arms to move.
Yeah, giving it the Y-shaped flexibility.
But this study shows it's way more involved. It's a dynamic player, especially in antigen binding.
How did they show that?
Well, they looked at what happened when the correct antigen was added. So TNF for adalimumab and infliximab, HER2 for trastuzumab. And they saw specific changes in fingerprints, chemical shifts, line broadening in the NMR signals.
Signals coming from where?
Specifically from the hinge and also some residues in the LCDR2 loop. This is direct evidence that the hinge conformation gets perturbed. It changes when the antibody binds its target. It undergoes fast dynamics.
So the hinge is actively reacting to the binding event, not just passively connecting things.
Exactly. It's participating. And they did a crucial control experiment.
The specificity test.
Right. They added a non-antigen VEGF to adalimumab. And the pattern of changes in the hinge signals, totally different.
Yeah.
Very minor, non-specific changes.
Which confirms the effect is specific to the right antigen binding.
Precisely. It validates that the hinge response is functionally relevant.
Wow. So the implication here is huge. The paper says it underlines the importance of the hinge and antigen recognition beyond the canonical role of CDRs.
That's the core takeaway. It suggests this might be a universal role of hinge dynamics across IgG1 mAbs. The hinge isn't just a spacer. It's actively involved, maybe helping mediate the interaction.
That really reframes how we picture antibody binding. It's not just the fingertips, CDRs, but maybe the wrist hinge is involved too.
That's a nice analogy. It suggests a more complex choreography.
Did this hinge dynamic hold true for the Fc fusion protein, etanercept, as well?
Good question. No, that was different. They found the hinge fingerprints are preserved across the IgG1 mAb framework, so it's common in standard antibodies. But in etanercept, the Fc fusion protein, those fingerprints were distorted.
Meaning the fusion format changes how the hinge behaves.
It seems so. It significantly alters the hinge conformation and dynamics, which tells us the overall protein architecture really matters for these dynamic regions. It's context dependent.
Okay, so the hinge is dynamic. It responds to antigen binding. How does this relate back to those therapeutic liabilities? Stability, function?
Right, the practical side.
Yeah.
The study made a direct link here, especially looking at oxidation induced by peroxide.
Simulating oxidative stress, a common problem.
Exactly. And the results were striking. Infliximab and etanercept, for example. They showed the maximum loss of function after peroxide treatment, They measured this using SPR, surface plasmon resonance, which tracks binding.
Okay, so they lost binding ability, and the NMR showed...
It showed significant changes in their hinge region fingerprints, especially specific leucine signals, changing their preferred conformation, their rhodomeric state.
A direct link between hinge structure changing and function being lost.
A direct correlation. And then you look at trastuzumab.
What happened there?
Its hinge conformation was almost unperturbed by the peroxide. And guess what? Its antigen binding affinity remained unaltered.
Wow. So the stable hinge correlated with stable function.
Precisely. It showcases the inherent stability of trastuzumab's hinge, but more importantly, the predictive power here. The NMR fingerprint predicts functional stability.
It's not just correlation, then, it sounds like causation. The paper mentions a strong linearity.
Yes, a strong linear relationship between the structural similarity measured by NMR, how much the hinge fingerprint changed, and the functional parameter from SPR, how much binding was lost.
Suggesting hinge changes lead to loss of function.
It strongly suggests that. The paper even posits that impacting a lower hinge conformation could be a necessary condition for the loss of antigen binding. It gives us a molecular handle on why function is lost.
That feels like a huge leap for antibody engineering and development.
I think it is. This technique offers in-depth experimental characterization at formulation-relevant concentrations. That's key, studying them under realistic conditions.
Not just in some ideal lab buffer.
Right. So it complements computational predictions. You can experimentally predict molecular liabilities, like oxidation hotspots in these flexible bits.
And then engineer around them. Design more stable antibodies.
That's the promise. Informing antibody engineering early, maybe even at the preclinical stage, identifying vulnerabilities related to hinge dynamics. They even saw thermodynamic stability, like aggregation temperature, correlating with the hinge fingerprint stability for trastuzumab.
So it's a powerful tool for rational design.
It seems to be, yes.
Mm-hmm.
For optimizing these crucial therapeutics.
Okay, this deep dive has been fascinating. We've seen how this clever NMR trick, looking at natural abundance and mobility, is finally opening up that black box of intact antibody dynamics. And the star player seems to be the hinge, not just a linker, but a dynamic orchestrator.
Absolutely. If we were to boil down the key result, I think there are three major takeaways here.
Okay, let's hear them.
First, this combination of natural abundance NMR and the peptide assignment strategy. It gives us a powerful, label-free way to actually see the dynamics of specific flexible parts, like the hinge, in these huge intact antibodies. It bypasses those old technical roadblocks.
Right, a new window into the molecule.
Second, the hinge's flexibility, its plasticity, isn't just incidental. It's directly and specifically changed by binding the correct antigen. This shows B plays an active, underappreciated role in antigen recognition itself, going beyond just the CDRs.
A fundamental shift in understanding the binding mechanism.
Mm-hmm. And third, there's a direct, measurable link between changes to the hinge structure, particularly the lower hinge, say through oxidation, and the loss of antigen binding function. This gives us a predictive tool.
A way to assess and maybe improve antibody stability and effectiveness based on monitoring the hinge.
Exactly. It connects structure, dynamics, and function in a really tangible way.
So, thinking about this, what does it all mean for you, our listeners? Whether you're deep in the field or just following science. Well, this research really does shift our view of how antibodies work. If something like the hinge, often seen as just structure, is actually key to dynamics, function, stability. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? What other background players in complex biological systems, other proteins, maybe RNA, larger assemblies, are actually running the show dynamically?
That's a great point.
And if we can understand these hidden dynamics, like with this NMR approach, could that revolutionize how we design drugs? Not just antibodies, but other big complex molecules where the old methods just don't give us the full picture.
It certainly opens up new avenues for thought and investigation.
Definitely some food for thought there.